Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the show this week. We've got a great show for you. Quick thing to answer, a lot of people have been asking where you can get our podcasts, and we're available on most of the distribution networks, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, now iHeartRadio Podcasts. Basically, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can check us out. Great show for you this week. We're going to be talking about biometrics and answering some questions on that. Got an extended Q&A section and got the latest in news for you. And with no further ado, let's go to the news.
Has your electric bill gone up since you started working from home? We can help with that. Contact DPI Solar at 503-857-0099 or online at dpisolar.com for all your solar needs. That's dpisolar.com.
So what do we have in the news this week?
Epic versus Apple.
Well, that sounds epic.
As long as it's not Apple.
An apple a day keeps the Epic away.
Something like that. All right. So what this is Epic has a game called Fortnite.
Yes.
And this game has been distributed for use on mobile environments through Apple and Google's respective stores. And one of the issues that comes up with this is the fact that both and Steam and other distribution software platforms do this as well, charge 30% of the take. So they have very strict rules about if you have in-app purchases, it has to go through, in this case, Apple, to be able to be done because Apple wants their money. So Epic's saying, well, we don't want to do this anymore, so they put a way into the system to be able to do microtransactions, something we've talked about before, the purchasing of things within the game, and doing that without basically bypassing Apple's pay system. So Apple kicked them off the store. Epic's saying, well, this is a violation of antitrust and a number of other things and has taken Apple to court. And since both of these are giant companies and have the money to do this, it's going to be interesting to see where this ends up going. And the question that really comes up from this is 30% is a lot of money for a lot of studios, especially smaller ones. It can take away their ability to make a profit. And in the case of the app stores, it's all apps. So anything you purchase within the app, 30% of that goes back to Apple or Google. The reason it isn't such a big deal with Google is their user agreement does allow you to work around it in certain situations, and you don't have to buy your apps from the Google store, from the Play Store. There's ways to work around that as well. It's not easy to do, but it is possible. On the Apple platform, outside of jailbreaking your device, it's not allowed. So that does make a difference, you know, between those two type of things and the ability to be able to install software and have control of the environment. So one of the other things that they're doing with this is trying to go to web-based apps. But the problem of it is in an Apple environment, any web browser you use is really their Safari. So if you're running Firefox or something, it has the skin of Firefox, but it's still using the same browser engine as theirs. And they have a lot of the functions that would be required for these things to work properly on your device locked out and aren't in a real hurry to unlock them. So that's what this is. That's where it's headed. And it's going to be interesting to see what the court does with this one.
Apple to invest an additional $45 million in Corning.
Corning makes Gorilla Glass, which is the front of our phones. And Apple is talking about a foldable phone. So new technology here, if it works, where you would have a flexible Gorilla Glass.
That would be amazing.
And I think that would be really cool, too. I think it'd be a lot more able to take a drop in that type of thing without breaking, for one thing. Plus, you know, you could fold your phone again. So you know, it's old as new again. We have foldable phones, but it's a smartphone. So, and that's actually not to say there are a few foldable phones on the market, but they're usually pretty big, and they've had a lot of problems with the hinges. So this would be a way to do it where you probably wouldn't have that kind of a situation.
Hologram experts can now create real-life images.
Yes, this is a technology Brigham Young has come up with that they, from what we can see, might have gotten from another college. And they're actually able to do what they call 3D printing of light. It's really cool. And whether it was developed there or not, it works really well. So one of the things they're doing is a lightsaber where it actually looks like a lightsaber. And you turn it on and it's kind of this this projection of light into the air. So what you're seeing is not virtual, it's real.
That's pretty cool.
So, and I think there's obviously a lot of applications for this kind of technology on down the road, but this being kind of the low-hanging fruit is a way to be able to demonstrate it in a way that people would kind of like. Now, of course, it's not going to cut through anything. It really is just laser light, you know, so you don't have all the other benefits of a lightsaber, but it would still be pretty cool for the costumes.
Yeah, definitely. Facebook to recommend you read an article before sharing it.
Really?
It seems like that would be common sense, but it hasn't been. And the problem is people just sharing and sharing and not knowing what's in the content they share. So they're testing this out in certain markets, and it depends on where your account's based and a number of other metrics if you're going to see this or not in the test. But when you go to share something, it prompts and says, you should read this article first if you haven't. And then you click OK. I don't know if that's the exact verbiage, but it's along those lines. And the idea being that social media has really been in the forefront for sharing fake information.
Yes.
And that type of thing. So this being an idea that's coming from Facebook is, I don't know if it's a disclaimer or if it will actually work. But I don't know. Maybe it will.
Somebody somewhere will read something.
You know, I think some of these things, it's like the same idea of when you start your car, don't look at the screen while you're driving. And a lot of people do. And a lot of people don't. There's a lot of safe drivers, but it certainly doesn't deter everybody. And I don't think that'll happen here either. But maybe it'll be a step in the right direction. We'll see.
Google to require multi-factor authentication.
Yeah, and I don't know quite how I feel about this. I don't have it turned on my Gmail account. So for all the hackers out there, it's an easy one to hack probably. But I do use it on all of my other Google hosting, that kind of thing. Now, multi-factor authentication, if you haven't run into it yet, is where you have to have two ways to authenticate. The reason this is being required is because what it's come down to with all the hacks is simply having a username and password is not good enough. There's a fundamental flaw in that authentication system, and the hackers can eventually get around it. So multi-factor authentication means that you have two ways to, or more required to log on, usually two. And most of the time, that's you put in a password, and then you also have to authenticate it from your phone or another email address or something, some sort of a second way to prove that you are, in fact, you. Yahoo has been doing this for a while. Google's offered as an option. You will still be able to opt out of it, but they are going to be making this the default coming up.
So
you log on to your Gmail account, you get in. Now,
I'm sorry, but it's like everybody who has a senior in your life who... going to have to help them out with this extra thing.
Yeah. And explain what it is, because it's...
And then you got to make sure they have a smartphone.
Yeah.
And that they know how to use it.
And now, again, Google's saying that it's not going to require you have a smartphone. There's other ways that they'll do it. One of the more unique ones is actually where it can call your landline, give you a number, and then you punch the number in from the landline. So they are taking into consideration that not everybody has a phone. And not everybody that has a phone would necessarily know how to do this.
But that means every time you try to get into your email, you're going to have to do this.
Yeah. Well, every time for the first time on a device. Now, if you save a device,
If
you continue to log on from that device, usually it doesn't ask for it again. But if you switch internet service providers or something changes, it might.
This makes more sense now.
Yeah. So let's make sure that's clear. It is not... Literally, every time you log into your account, you're going to have the second factor, but you will have to have it the first time on any device. If you go to a new device you've never used before, or if you take your laptop and go on Wi-Fi at Starbucks or something, then you would have to do it again there. But
That makes a lot more sense. I thought it was, you know, every single time you logged on to check your email, you were going to have to, you know, go check your phone.
Yeah, no, that would be a pain in the neck. And it's a method of authentication. The other time that this can pop up is if someone is trying to hack your account and you have a lot of bad attempts, then it might throw it to where you have to authenticate again. So there's some things like that. The banks use this and have quite successfully. And if you think about your online bank account, you don't have to use the multi-factor every time you log on from the same device, just the first time. And this will be the same way.
Awesome. Pandemic speeds move to digital ID.
Yeah. So on this same topic, this is interesting. 5 states are doing this. 3 more are looking at adopting it. Is the idea that you can have your driver's license, your ID on your phone. So like a digital ID, exactly as this says, and that eventually they'd like it to replace, but right now they want you to keep your physical ID as a backup. And You know, it's interesting. There's good things and bad things to this. One of the big good things is you can hide certain information when you're showing somebody your ID, like your address.
Yeah.
If they don't need it, just need to see the ID. So that's good. But it seems like when you go with anything electronic, A, there might be more of a way to fake it or hack it. And the second part of it is what if your phone doesn't turn on that day? I guess that's why you have the paper one as the backup. But they are definitely headed in this direction. This is, again, an example of the pandemic pushing everything forward. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Got a great show for you this week. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Glad to have you here. Glad to have you listening. Question that we have in this week comes from our Tech Wednesday segment on biometrics. And we talked about that a little bit, and I'll explain that in a minute. But biometrics seems to be a topic that has some controversy. So, Gretchen, Jeremy, where do we start with this?
Well, how about a good definition of what exactly is biometrics?
All right. I think that it's actually a very good place to start. And what biometrics are, at least a 10,000 foot identification, is using something that's personal, like an eye scan or a fingerprint or something like that, for a purpose in technology. Usually it's to replace a password or that type of thing. And Tech Wednesday this week, we talked about something called Amazon Go. It's a store that they've had for a while up in Seattle where they've used this. They're expanding it to their stores in New York and eventually will be to Whole Foods. And that's the ability where you can register your palm print to your phone, and you go into the store and shop, and instead of checkers, you just swipe your palm print over a scanner, and it automatically charges your Amazon account for what you're buying.
Ha. Yeah, me too.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't know.
Okay, I don't think I like that.
I have to say, since Tech Wednesday, that has been the majority of the feedback from everybody listening, and some of you really like the idea. It's easier, and it is touchless. So for the whole COVID era, you don't have to touch a touch screen or anything like that. But on the same token, it's like, what could possibly go wrong here, you know? And
yeah.
One of the things that's been coming up with all of this, in the case of biometrics, cybernetics, all of these type of things that used to be very much sci-fi type things, are coming into, or will be coming into, something where we see them for use. Cybernetics is a for example I think we're going to see as a huge quality of life thing. They've worked out technologies where they're starting to be able to read the nerves from the brain. So if you lose your arm or something like that, you're able to get a replacement and have it actually work. And it's in its infancy right now, but it is definitely coming along, and we're going to see a lot of this kind of technology used going forward. We've already started to see exoskeletons and some of those type of things out there. And the reality of the situation is, during most of our lifetimes, these are all things that we'll see. Now, biometrics is already used a lot on things like cell phones, and we've seen it for a long time on door codes. So if you're going into a building and it scans your eye or scans your fingerprints, that's all early version of biometrics.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of a thing. Now, what do you think about that compared to the palm print? Are you comfortable?
Okay. I think the eye scan and like the fingerprint thing to use as security, I think those things are okay. But the palm print, I don't know. I have this image of somebody managing to use some kind of like silicon or some kind of fleshy type.
Oh, you mean like the Mythbusters?
Yeah. And making a copy of your hand.
They've already done that. And they proved it works.
And
so, Jeremy, you're going to have to tell us, what did the Mythbusters do?
The Mythbusters did a thing of like all the Hollywood myths, and they set up a thing to try and figure out if you could break in using all these super high-tech locks. And they made fake thumbs to scan stuff, and they managed to just go right through all the doors.
Okay.
They've done it. It's been done. You can fake a thumbprint or a fingerprint. As long as you can get a copy of the one that's you know, set up to the lock, you can get that, make a fake one, and get in.
So you could make a fake scan or a print of a palm, make it into a glove, and then you could buy whatever the heck you want on somebody else's
account.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea.
Modern version of cloning a credit card. My goodness. Yeah. You know,
yes.
Yeah. I don't like this idea.
No.
And the thing of it is too, and this is one of the big worries, I know, with a lot of the questions that have come in on this, is the other side of it is, if we've seen big tech is not very good in a lot of ways of securing data.
No,
all the way. So this database is going to be stored somewhere, and eventually there is the possibility that it would get leaked out. Now, I do have to say Amazon seems to be a little better on this than a lot of other companies, but that's the potential still absolutely exists that mistakes can happen. And now all of a sudden you can change a credit card. It would be a lot less possible to change your palm print. I guess then we need to get back into the cybernetics thing, but what a reason to do it.
You know? I think this is not such a good idea.
No, not like that.
I have a question. On my smartwatch, there's like a little thing on the back on the inside. Is that a form of biometrics in order to be able to tell me like my heart rate and stuff like that?
The scanner, yeah, it is based in that kind of technology. Now, that's not being used for a security function, but it is the same idea. It's reading something from your body and being able to give you information based on that. And those kind of sensors are really coming along too. The next generation of iWatches, they're saying that it's going to have the ability to do things like blood pressure and blood sugar and some of these type of things just built into it. So all of that kind of stuff. And those type of instruments, I think, are a little bit different. For one thing, usually, check the user agreement, but usually they don't store your biometric information beyond being able to display it on the screen and maybe logging things that's personal.
There are some that do send it to a system that if you want it to.
Right. But you would opt into that. I know Fitbit does that and some of the other ones, but you have the ability to turn it on and off and it defaults to off. So, you know, that type of thing is out there, but that you have a little bit more control over it. Now, I don't think with Amazon Go, or at least with Whole Foods, what they're talking about is requiring that you would do this. You can still check out in the conventional way. It just would give it as another option to pay alongside a credit card or I don't know that. What did they call that? Cash? I remember that before the pandemic, we used that.
Like the cashless society that we're kind of evolving into.
Oh, you mean the tap and go? Or
I've seen people use their watches. I've seen people use their phones. There's no need for handprints, thumbprints, eye scans, or you know, having your blood tested at a supermarket. There's plenty of other ways to get out of there without touching anything.
Right. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what the actual client or customer feedback is going to be on this. So, you know, and we'll kind of go from there. All right. So we've got about 50 seconds left, and I'm going to pose this question because it's come from listeners. If there was a such thing as a Terminator type cyborg, would you be scared of it?
Absolutely. Like, I've seen all the puppets and the maquettes, and I have a Terminator model somewhere in my stuff.
Right.
It's basically a steel skeleton that wanders around and shoots things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
So, as opposed to the flesh version that does the same thing. But, you know, no, it's interesting. You know, we're going to have to see where this kind of stuff goes, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this in the near future. Maybe not that. But certainly cybernetics are going to come into its own. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're going to go look at a review of a couple of television shows and I think related books. Jeremy and Gretchen, take it away.
All right. Our first one that we want to discuss is something called Shadow and Bone. You can watch this on Netflix. There are currently 8 episodes. There is the impression that there will be more episodes, at least I hope so, after binge watching this. It seems like the setting is kind of like a fantasy history
steampunk? It's like a Russian Tsarist Empire era.
Okay, but it's not real history.
No, it's not. It's fantasy because there's magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And apparently a lot of this was filmed, I believe, in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the cast is huge. And I really found the special effects, the costuming, the locations, and the actors were really good. And the story has you just riveted.
It's an amazing series. And it's based on a series of novels by I'm horribly pronouncing her name, by Leigh Bardugo. could be Lee. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But she wrote a series of books. There's more than three in the series. But it's would be what of like late 1700s, early 1800s. There's rifles and machine guns, but there's also magic. Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting fantasy series.
I would seriously recommend watching this.
Oh, absolutely.
We went through that just a couple of days of binge watching.
Oh yeah, we binged the heck out of it. It was awesome.
Okay, so in our next series that we're going to talk about, and we have not finished watching this one.
Nope.
It's called Jupiter's Legacy, and that is also seen on Netflix. And it looks like it has how many? Looks like it has 8 episodes.
That seems to be the thing.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that it's probably also going to have a second season where you get maybe more episodes. This has been an interesting one. It's they're superheroes.
Yes. It's an alternate universe of superheroes where history happened. Like we remember most of it, the stock market crashed. There was World War II. All these things happened.
The dust storms in Oklahoma.
Yeah, but there's superheroes.
Yeah, which is completely different. And these people have some serious powers.
And some serious problems.
Yes, these people, they all need to go see some shrinks.
Yes.
Or at least a good somebody to talk to.
So it's based on a comic book series by Mark Miller and drawn by Frank Quitely, published by Image Comics. So it's looks like 2013 is when this one started out. So they've got a few of those comics out. If you're interested in comparing between the comics and the TV show, I would definitely go hit up your local comic book store because, you know, comic books are awesome.
This one is also, wouldn't you say, visually appealing to watch?
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful costumes, good settings, great actors.
Yeah.
They have some really challenging roles. This is not the very super stiff, you know, superhero where,
yeah.
I mean, they really take it to almost to an extreme, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
So, Bill, does this sound like something that you'd be interested in watching?
It does. You know, I like where they do a new take on these different kind of things, although I'm of the opinion that most superheroes probably would need to see a shrink anyway. So I don't think there's anything too unusual about that. But, you know, as far as the rest of it goes, I think that they're doing a lot of kind of new spins, if you will, on some of these different type of things. And it's kind of fun to see where they take it. And you had mentioned the first one being kind of almost a steampunk era type thing.
Uh-huh,
yes. As far as the way it's put together. And it does kind of have that feeling. I haven't mm-hmm. watched it yet, but when you told me about it, I did look at the preview. And it is, you know, definitely that in of itself caught my attention.
Yeah, you like steampunk, don't you?
Yeah, I like steampunk. I always have. I think it's kind of cool. An era without electronics, but just basically mechanics. And mm-hmm. In the 1920s, there was definitely a lot of that before the whole thing happened with microchips. We had vacuum tubes, but that was about the end of electronics at that time. So you saw a lot of these different things, and they were building and being extremely creative and able to come up with stuff. So it's a lot of fun to play the era. Steampunk representation is obviously fantasy. But it's still fun to be able to dress up, have the goggles, do all of the different stuff.
It also has a very strong World War One era with the uniforms.
Yeah.
Oh, there's lots of uniforms.
That was the last of the nice uniforms was World War One, I would have to say.
So, and there you are. But both of these series are on Netflix. Check them out. Let us know what you think of them. And I will do the same thing when I actually get a chance to watch them here. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. This is the section of the show where you ask your questions and we endeavor to answer them. And in order to do that, we need you to keep sending us your questions. 503-766-6264 is our phone number. One User Friendly on Facebook or Twitter. UserFriendlyNation.com and iHeart Podcasts are going to be carrying the show as of June 1st, and you can submit your question from there as well. What do we have this week?
Does Sirius Radio still exist?
The satellite radio? Oh yeah, they still exist, and I still pay a monthly fee. So this used to be Sirius, and XM was a competitor. They merged back in 2008, so about 12 years ago now, a little longer, and they're still out there. You can get them in most newer cars. You can still get satellite radios. It still runs $10-15 a month, depending on which subscription you get. So if it's something you like, I use it because I drive enough to where it's nice to have it in the car. They've also added streaming services and that type of thing. I really haven't played with that because I'm more a Pandora type person when I'm using the computer for music. But they're definitely still out there, and they've definitely still got some good copy and content.
What kind of equipment do you use to record your show?
You know, this is an interesting question. This comes from a listener, and we got to talk a little bit when she called in. And she's looking at doing a podcast and was just curious about this. And, you know, when we were recording in studio, we had a lot more what I would call professional, like station type equipment that we used. And since the pandemic set in, we've been having like a lot of people to work from home. And added to the fact that we're quite a few miles apart now, you know, we've had to be able to set this up in such a way that it'll work. And it does. Now, we do have some occasional problems, like a lawnmower that goes by while we're recording once in a while and that type of thing. So you don't necessarily get as clean of an audio doing it this way, but it does work, and it seems to work pretty well. We're using Samsung USB mics, and we've standardized that with everybody so that we know what kind of audio input there is. I use a foam screen that goes around the microphone that I've just been trying out to kind of eliminate some of the background noise. The other thing is I changed my desk, and my new desk has a glass top, so I was getting a lot of echo with that. So I also have a mouse pad under it. So I've done some stuff like that to try to get the audio cleaned up for recording. We just use a regular computer. We talk on Google Hangouts, although any video conferencing app would work for that, Zoom or whatever. I don't record with the software built into the video conferencing app. I do use my own thing, and Sound Booth is my primary. There's a lot of free ones out there too, like Audacity, that you can use. It really depends on what you need, but you don't have to drop a lot of money to be able to do a podcast. Now, what do you guys think about your equipment?
I'm happy with the mic.
Yeah, we have.
And the headphones.
We have headsets and the microphone. Everything seems to work okay for us.
Yep. And that was one thing. I ended up moving to a wired headphone just because I had a lot of trouble with the wireless. Although with Bluetooth now, it probably would work better. But yeah, that's really what we got. We spent, about $200 per workstation on the equipment. We already had the computers. The only other piece of equipment we have is when we get to go do live shows, which we haven't used in a while, are Sony Pocket Recorders.
And yes.
Those are really good for that type of an environment. We need to check those batteries.
I was thinking the same thing.
Right. Can you really drive a Tesla from the backseat?
This question comes from a listener. If you saw in the news, there was a Tesla that someone was pulling out of their driveway onto a street, and it crashed, and they found the driver in the back seat. So Tesla has a feature called autopilot, and there's been some controversy with this. Is it safe and that type of thing? So in answer to the question, no, you cannot drive your Tesla from the back seat. In fact, the investigation showing that in this particular situation, the driver had to be in the driver's seat when the crash happened. Because the way that the system's set up is you couldn't have engaged the autopilot in the driveway, for one thing, and because it doesn't have the right kind of lines on the road, which wouldn't work for that. And the second part of it is there's a function built into that where every 10 seconds you have to touch the steering wheel or the autopilot disengages when it's on. So that's the answer to the question. No, you cannot drive a Tesla from the backseat using autopilot.
What job search site do you recommend?
You know, the pandemic has really pushed everything forward, and it really is now where if you apply for a job, you do it online almost everywhere. Some companies have their own, go to our websites, but really the big ones out there, Indeed, Monster, those two are great. They have a lot of tools for helping you set up your resume properly. One of the other things I do like about those kind of job sites too is you set up your resume once, and their system will automatically configure it for whoever you're applying to. So I know some of us, all of us, I think from time to time, have problems where you do a resume and then someone goes, well, that's not right. You need to do it this other way. And then
Or so, upload your resume and then fill out this question of what you've done and all the stuff that's already on your resume.
Yeah. Fill it out. And it's like it's redundant. And I hate, that.
So I found with those job sites you go through, you do have to be prepared to spend a little time doing that once and uploading your resume and doing your cover letter. And it has a lot of tools to help you with that. But once you do it, it's pretty much the easy apply after that, or will automatically reconfigure based on what the applicant wants. And then it helps you track them all in one place too. So there's a lot of advantages to that. And right now, with the job market being so unusual, to put it mildly, it's a good idea to be able to have these tools at your disposal to track things and kind of know what you've been doing.
Is Alexa's voice AI or a voiceover artist?
So I'm glad I'm out of NDA on that by a week. Interesting question. So AI, Ivy, Alexa, Siri, Google, all these type of things is generated by the AI. However, the actual voice is a voice artist, or was to start out with. The voice artist for Google, or I'm sorry, for Amazon was Nina Rolli, and the voice artist for Siri was Susan Bennett. So these are actual people. You can look up their websites and different things that are out there and see what they do. But that's where the voices originally came from. But over the years that these things have existed, have very much been adapted to what we hear today.
Why can't I buy Heart of the Jedi, which is a Star Wars novel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a Star Wars novel that goes back to the 90s, from what I understand. And I don't know, you just go to Amazon, right?
Not anymore.
So why can't you buy it?
Well, it originally, he developed the book, and then it got canceled. So they never actually printed it.
So it's not an actually officially sanctioned Star Wars novel.
Okay. So,
but apparently it went on sale on Amazon and did really, really well. A lot better than that High Republic stuff.
Right, right.
Which is all very strange.
You're absolutely a fan of. But anyway, that's another topic.
Oh, God.
So, all right. So right now I do notice that you can buy them from scalpers on eBay for, looks like about $500. So, hey, if you can get your hands on it, though, it sounds like it's a decent book. We'll have to see if we can get it and review it.
Yeah.
Are there any updates on Amazon Sidewalk?
Yeah, they're launching the system. And we've talked about this previously on the show. If you don't remember, it kind of creates, well, not kind of, it creates basically neighborhood networks using low-powered protocol from Bluetooth. And things like your devices, if you drop your keys and have a tile on it, can be found even if it's not connected to Wi-Fi. It seems like this is pretty secure. I'm going to go ahead and opt in and try it out and see if I like it. And I'll let everybody know. But this is coming online pretty soon. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week. Always good to hear about new content, new things to be able to watch, because, you know, a lot of us are still dealing with not being able to go out yet. It's starting to wane, but it's still good to know about what's on television, what's out there that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm expecting to see, when we are out at Comic-Cons, costumes from some of these shows that
we've
seen.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Now, there's going to be, oh, you know, I think there's going to be potentially a lot of new stuff. And speaking of which, we got an email from Adam Savage about the Silicon Valley Comic Con this fall, and it looks like it's going to be done as a real event, not virtual.
Yay!
So looking forward to that. In fact, the tickets are going on sale for it today, for the 2-day event. And I'll tell you what, I'm really ready to go back to do something.
Something.
And as long as it's safe to do it, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And like you say, new costumes and just people being able to get out of the house again. Now, I know one of the first ones that we're planning to do that'll be in person. We've got two virtual ones coming up in July, the Game Developers Conference and the San Diego Comic-Con, the virtual version of that. But then in August, we have Black Hat, which is going to be a physical event. Chaz is going to be covering that. And then the week after that, August 11th to 15th, is the 50th anniversary of the Star Trek convention from Creation.
Sweet.
Going to that. So you know, that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have to figure out our costuming for that. I might go as a Klingon.
Really?
It's possible. I'm thinking about it very seriously. I will just need to get the rest of my costume done. But anyway, it's looking like it's going to be a real in-person thing. And I haven't been to a Star Trek convention in many years, so I'm kind of looking forward to it just anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So we've got a number of other ones coming up. The UFO Festival in September in McMinnville, Oregon.
That's going to be fun.
September 23rd to the 21st. That'll be a first one for us. And then San Diego is still planning an in-person event, as far as I know, over Thanksgiving weekend. And then the Emerald City Comic Con, December 2nd to 5th up in Seattle. And the other one, I'll get the dates for it, but it looks like Rose City, the Portland, Oregon one, is also planning to be an in-person event. Now, all of these are subject to change. If there's some real problem with COVID, I would imagine that the in-person thing will be, you know, checked out before the event actually happens to make sure it's safe. But right now, that is what they're planning. What out of those is the one that you're looking forward to the most?
I'm looking forward to Star Trek, and I'm also looking forward to Emerald City.
Yeah. Gretchen?
Those are my favorites.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, but I also want to see this UFO Fest.
Yeah, I think that one will be cool. I'm looking forward to Star Trek, like I said, just because I haven't done that kind of a convention in a long time. So it would be fun even in a normal year, and kind of the first one we're going to get to go to again. So, you know, that I think will be my favorite. I loved Emerald City. I love Rose City. All of those are really good ones. San Diego's good. I mean, yeah, you know, none of these are a bummer. Are they all?
We're going to be super busy.
Yeah.
Darn. That's a shame. I don't want to be busy. Don't have things to do.
Sarcasm sign.
So anyway, until then, we will keep you updated. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0, copyright 2014 to 2021, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or the station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeareTechnology.com. Podcasts available at userfriendlynation.com, theanswerportland.com, or anywhere you listen to podcasts.